Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for over 43 years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we get together in front of our radios, and we communicate. We teach each other. We learn from each other. We hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you all for returning here this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will come back and give you the usual links.
Roy, you need to speak against white supremacy. There has been disturbing transmission on this repeater. Please.
Would you like to identify yourself?
I don't have a call sign. But there has been disturbing transmissions on this repeater that are propagating white supremacy. Please, speak against it.
Okay, for sundry reasons, I can't continue the conversation with you since you're not licensed and you're operating illegally. But I will keep your words in mind. I have recordings of Limark's repeaters, and I'll take a listen to it. And if it's required, I will contact the executive board. So that should be the end of our conversation right now. I would suggest you get yourself a license. It's not that difficult to do. Technician license are relatively easy to acquire. But let us end it with that. Let me jump again, and I'll be right back and give you the usual links. Okay, if you want to reach me via email, that would be either mailbag questions you can't ask on the technical net because you're not don't have access to a radio, or if there's some kind of topic that's in the news that you're familiar with that you'd like to share your knowledge with us, or if you have a TechNet puzzle. We're always looking for TechNet puzzles, preferably ones that you can say. You don't need an image. You don't need a video. And especially those that you can't Google in 10 seconds, or if you Google it, you get the wrong answer. Also, if you want me to contact Paul for a space-related, NASA-related video or web page article that you saw, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. And if you want to contact me, it's either mailbag@ac2gs.com. or roy@limarktech.net. Either of those will reach me. I have a link page available with a lot of interesting YouTubes and articles that I've seen throughout the week. I cut and paste them and put them on a link page, and they're available 24/7. You can reach it by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com or alternately links.limarktech.net. We have a chat room. It's been real quiet for months now, so I don't know if it needs resuscitation or what. If you're interested, you can get to it by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com or chat.limarktech.net. And we have an audio stream of the technical net that I leave live for the rest of the week, so you can listen into the live feed from the Glen Oaks repeater. You can get to that by typing into your browser either technet.ac2gs.com or stream.limarktech.net. And, of course, I'd like to remind people that MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site of these technical nets. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it's available 24/7, and some of his archives go as far back as September of 2006. So there's a lot of wisdom from people who have moved away from the area and from others who've passed away and become silent keys. So avail yourself of their wisdom. It's still very appropriate. Technology, the laws of physics have not changed in the last few decades. So please check it out. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned. It's a standard night. We're going to ask for questions on a technical and science-based nature. I hope that the first few questions are amateur radio related, since this is an amateur radio net. But, you know, as always, as the night progresses, we open it up to any science and technology that you have a question. We'll try our best to provide some kind of an answer or some place to look for an answer. So that should take us to about 10:15. 10:15 pull, WS2N will present the SpaceNet report. He has some exciting new news that you no doubt have heard over the last week, and he will expand upon that, and that should take us to approximately 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on it and wish you all a good week. As long as the laws of physics, the All-Star Link, and my computer continue to function, hopefully we will be able to accomplish all those things. Let me drop for a second, and I do want to bring up something very short. I don't really want to go into too much detail, but I was slightly amused by it. I don't want people to kind of veer off into politics or sociology on this, but I do want to discuss it. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. We often talk about artificial intelligence. It's always in the news. It's certainly in the stock market. Stocks are being pumped up daily, because everyone is throwing AI into something that they plan to be doing, and all the optimistic people buying stocks think that that's going to double and triple the value of these companies. So no doubt you've heard Google, who has been working with artificial intelligence for many years but has not really made a big splash yet, made a negative splash, and it only goes to show how many different ways that artificial intelligence can go terribly wrong. In the past, AI is basically modeled over using either text or images or sounds that already exist. So they're trained on millions and millions of pictures or sounds or pages of text. And for some reason or other, the early artificial intelligence tended to favor images of European white people. That was noted and caused a bit of a flurry. So I guess Google thought that they were going to err on the opposite side. They have a new artificial intelligence program called Gemini. And I think it went live this week. And unfortunately, someone asked for a photorealistic image of Vikings, and they got an image of a bunch of West African people dressed up as Vikings, which upset people. And then they asked for World War II era German soldiers, and they got a bunch of Asian and black people dessed up as Wehrmacht and other soldiers in the German army. So that annoyed a bunch of other people. So they shut the whole thing about generating images down until they could do something to fix that. I just thought it was amusing. I don't want to really go into the sociological aspects. It's just amazing how many different ways you can get artificial intelligence painfully wrong. Anyone with any comments, feel free.
Okay. Speaks for itself.
Okay. Well, that's vague, but okay. I think I prefer it vague. Let's go on to the main part of this portion of the technical net. Questions, comments, topics for discussion. Preferably, let the earlier ones be amateur radio related, if possible. So please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, and whether you got a topic, a comment, a question, what have you.
And to I'm radio related, but mostly from scientific side. So put me on the last list, in the list.
W2LVQ.
Yes, W2LVQ. You got a question, a comment, a topic, and what's your first name, sir?
Yeah, the first name is Ron, and I have a question. I've been licensed since 1994, but I've been away for a while, and I came back recently, and there's a lot of digital stuff going on, but not my question. I've been monitoring 4.6 Nixol for a while on my 2-meter 440 Yaesu, and I hear what seems to be 10-meter QSOs going on there. I don't get, I'm hearing that. and I've been monitoring to try and find out what's the station ID and what there, and I hear these conversations quite clearly, so to say the least, I'm confused. So if anybody can shed some light on that, I would be very appreciative. Back to you, Roy. This is W2LVQ.
Roy, did you get me?
Yes, Leslie, I have you down for the last of the questioners. Hopefully that won't be too long. And, Ron, I thank you for your question. I'm not familiar with that, the goings-on. I haven't really been listening on the VHF band that much lately. It's possible that someone's just playing around with a transceiver capable of doing a cross-banding. So he's picking up 10 meters. And he's replaying it, he thinks, locally on the VHF band that he can pick up with a handy talkie, and he doesn't realize that it's bleeding all over the place. Or it could be a linked repeater. There are cases of people having repeaters on 10 meters and linking them to UHF and VHF. But I'll throw it out to the audience. If you're familiar with that frequency, and hearing 10 meters conversations coming off of it. Anyone clear? Anyone have an idea what's going on there?
And two, to you, do.
Yes.
That's a repeater in upstate New York, and it has a 10-meter input. If you go online, you can see what the frequencies are. So it's fully legit.
Oh, okay. So you have your answer, Ron. I was always curious about when you have a repeater when you have a 10-meter repeater and you're linked it to a either a 2-meter or a 70-center repeater. The frequencies that frequency allocation for 10-meter repeaters, I believe, is outside of the technician's band. It's general and extra. So what happens if you kind of talk using your tech license to communicate on 2-meter on a repeater that is linked to a 10-meter repeater that is set up on a frequency where you don't have legitimate rights to transmit? I wonder what the FCC rules for something like that are.
Yeah, I have a comment on that one, N2TVU.
Yeah, feel free, because it's something that I've been thinking about for a while now, because someone was asking me how, if it was easy to kind of cross-band onto 10 meters to let people who don't have a 10-meter radio have access to, through their mobiles or HTs that operate on 2 meters and 70 centimeters. And that seems like a flashing red light to me personally. But I'd like to hear what you have to say on it.
Okay. Basically, the way it works is that as long as you're going in either on 2 meters or 440, a tech is fully legit. The 10-meter link is being operated by the repeater operator who has the proper class license for 10 meters. So basically, he's a control station. And that's pretty much what it is. So, a tech can communicate on either 2 meters or 442 10 meters through a repeater, but not the other way around. And as far as the legit part is concerned, it's, the guy only running the repeater, of course, has to have a general or higher.
Okay, I mean, that sounds like a legitimate rationale. The only place it falls down is I am sure that the guy who runs the repeater isn't listening to his repeater 24/7. So it's not quite like third party where, the guy. And also, in the cases of third party traffic, you usually use the third party's call sign, not your own. But I guess that's a good workaround for it, because you got to figure out some way of being able to make it legal.
WS2N question?
Yes, Paul.
I wonder if those 10-meter repeaters, are they FM? Years ago, they were all FM. They were quite good. A lot of fun. Unless things have changed. Back to you, Roy.
Well, I'll ask N2TU. My guess would be, yeah, they're FM. I believe there was a guy, Howard, who shows up, comes by every so often, once or twice a year, to our technical net. He usually links in rather than just uses a radio. So he comes in through IRLP or some other linking technology. And I think he has a 10-meter, or at least he used to operate a 10-meter net.
Already, M2TU. I think that question was given to me. Yes, it is FM. You need FM modulation. That's why it's you got. That's why you have to be general or above. So if that ends of the band, that FM is not part that's authorized for text.
Okay, so thank you. I got my answer. It sounds almost like I need to kind of talk to a lawyer as well and have him look through Part 97. I knew a guy who was studying for his ham license, and he actually thought that he needed to read the entirety of Part 97 of the law, the FCC law on hams. And I told him his eyes would bleed if he tried something like that. So thank you, Ed. I appreciate your assistance. Ron, I hope you got your answer.
Well, I thank everybody for their input. A lot of those things have crossed my mind. You know, I guess the biggest thing for me is I hear them so clearly. They hit me with such a good signal, yet I can't get back to whatever repeater they're on. And I guess I just have to keep listening and trying things to see, because you've got to assume that the repeater that I'm hearing them on, 10-meter side, is coming in somewhere else. But thinking that what I'm hearing them on is 2 meters, I'm on that, a 2-meter frequency. So anyway, I'm going to keep listening, and but I thank everybody, and it certainly has cleared up a lot of concepts. So I'll turn it back to you, Roy. AC2GS W2LVQ.
Okay, very good, Ron. I mean, there's a bunch of different reasons why this is happening, possibly. One is they may have changed their PL tone, so you may have looked up their, I hope you looked up their PL tone, and without a proper PL tone, you're not going to be able to trigger it to transmit, so that's a possibility. Another one is, unfortunately, I have bumped into repeaters that are multiply linked to all kinds of other repeaters, but not necessarily in a two-way configuration. For whatever reason, the net control operator, either on a timer or just all the time, has some repeaters just set to rebroadcast, but not to transmit. I guess theoretically it's possible that it could be a net control operator who's a little wary of giving technicians access to the 10-meter non-technician band, despite the okay. So they may have made it a one-way phenomena. So there's a bunch of different reasons why you're hearing something that's originating on a different frequency and you're not able to get the repeater to respond.
Roger, I agree with that. Let me make sure I got it. And I'm aware. But I'm going to keep listening and see, even though I don't have the PL, this radio's got a little wonderful feature that when people are talking, I can scan for the PL and get it from them, theoretically. So anyway, I'm going to keep listening because it's an interesting frequency. 146-460. Thanks, Roy. I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, very good, Ron. Well, we kind of interrupted our call for questions. We only had two, and I hope we have a few more for tonight. So does anyone else want to put their name on our list for questions or topics or comments? Please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, and what you got, question, comment, topic.
I have a question about digital communications.
Okay, Jim doubled with you. Would you like to give us your call sign again?
Sure, Harvey, N2BLI, November 2, Papa, Lima, India.
Okay, so I have Jim down, and I have you down, so we'll get to you soon. Anyone else want to put their name down?
November 2, to Charlie John, had a question on infrared.
Okay. B2BX, so, time permits, can you a discussion of propagation and maybe the repeater issue? Well, go ahead.
Okay, Frank, so I got Charlie and I got Frank. Anyone else want to put their name down before we get back to the show?
November 2, Zulu Charlie John.
Okay, we have Jim, we have N2PLI, we have John, we have Frank. Anyone else I missed?
Kilo.
November 2, Victor Ocho, Zulu Mobile in Nebraska.
Evening on a Sunday night, I'm Charlie.
Okay, I heard Charlie and I heard Kat. So let me ask Charlie, do you have any questions for tonight or are you just checking in?
Both. I'd like to know more about this, the AI, the artificial intelligence, because I don't like it. But let's get down to the first question first and get down to the bottom with me later.
Okay, very good. So I'll put you down there at the bottom there. Okay, let me just make sure. I got Jim, I got N2PLI, I got John, I got Frank, I got Charlie. Anyone else I'm missing? I have Wesley, too.
Yeah, N2TUU, I got a question, and also want to comment to that guy that's looking for the repeater on 46. That's a 77 hertz PL.
N2VHD with a comment. I want to espouse some information from this morning set, if I may. This is N2VHD, Ken in Nebraska.
Yeah, sure. You have a special case, Ken. You're not with us the entire night. I understand that you're traveling to and fro, and you're going to be out of the zone. So we usually put a special place for you, Ken. So what do you got to say to us tonight?
Thank you. I feel really happy about that. And so I was trying to say this morning, these monitors we use for, you were doing, your career, you look at mammograms on these things, and they have to send them back, get new ones. And if you move them 1 millimeter, you have to have a person come in and recalibrate them. It's very interesting how some monitors are just monitors and some are different because of FDA regulations of what they're used for. So that's what I was just trying to say this morning. I just wanted to say that to you. And you couldn't hear me very well. It wasn't really earth-shattering information. And they really get you on the hook with the regulation of what you got to have, So being a hospital, we have to have certain monitors that were completely crazy prices. So that's all I was saying this morning. I'll just give it back to Ned and the other side listening. Thank you. Give me your time. Back to you.
Okay, very good, Ken. Ken is a regular of my alter ego is Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock. I'm usually net control operator because, there's only so many nets you can control. Net control operator for the Kings County Radio Club 10-meter net. That's on 28.380 most of the time. Today we were on 28.381. And Ken's a regular out of South Dakota. And at first his signal was nice and strong. It was about half an S signal above my noise floor. And as the conversation continued, it creeped lower and lower until I could barely make them out. So I thank you, Ken. I thank you for your participation Sunday mornings for the 10-meter net, and I thank you for coming here. Yeah, I mean, you have to understand, unfortunately, medical equipment is kind of life and death. You screw it up, and you can kill people. That doesn't happen with an Xbox. All things considered, it's probably people are making too much money on these things, but when life and death is on the balance, I'd rather err on the side of overregulation and more expensive equipment just to be on the safe side. So that's my 2 cents worth.
Very well said. Very succinct. Yes. So I'll leave it at that. and I'll just back out and be on the side listening, driving down this lonely Nebraska highway, hoping not to hit my third deer in 2 years. 73 from Nebraska. I'll be in the wing. Thank you. That's VAC motion.
Okay, very good, Ken. Let's go back to our list. Next up is Jim. What's your question or your topic for tonight, Jim?
Hi, Roy, K2VHD. I'll start with the antenna question. As I try to break into the AHF thing again, I talked to a guy in Jersey. I think it was K2MSF on 80 meters last night, and he said he was on a 160-meter NFIT half wave, utilizing it on 80 meters, and he was getting through beautiful. That type of antenna, if I could make that, would solve this what I'm trying to get here. Any comments on a 160-meter NFIT half wave utilized on 80 meters? Is that a thing?
Well, I mean, the point of an NFIT is it's a multi-band, if it's done right, it's a multi-band harmonic-based antenna. So you should be able to get, if it's designed for 160, that gives you a chance at 80 and 40 and 20 and such, if it's built right. It's usually the lowest frequency is limited by what it's a half wavelength for. So, yeah, if you make a half wavelength 160, it's possible for it to work at 80. The trick is always is what kind of elevation is he using. If you have it too close to the ground, you're getting a lot of ground coupling, and that's going to diminish the efficiency of it as a transmitter. So it's certainly possible with the design of a good NFED half-wave antenna.
Unfortunately, I was looking for a 49-to-1 unon to work with that at the Hamfest today. I didn't find one. That would have been nice. But I'll continue to work on that.
Okay. I wish you luck. Again, I think you mentioned that the other guy had a 64-to-1. So, some people have better luck with that. You know, it works either way as far as I'm aware. It has more to do with the attenuation of the design of the onion. Some onions are created a little bit better than others. They have a wider bandwidth capability. They have higher power handling capacity, and both the 64-to-1 and the 49-to-1 should reasonably match for an NFED half wave.
Well, I'm going to see if I get one. I'm going to give that a try. If I could combine my 160 and 80 into one wire, that would help tremendously solve my space problem.
Okay. I mean, usually if you look at a lot of designs for NFED half-waves, they implement a little trick. They either put a capacitance somewhere in there or a few loops of inductance so that the harmonics are closer to the handbands. If you don't have any kind of component in line on the NFED, the harmonics are a little bit off of the multiples of the handbands, and you kind of lose the resonance. So if you take a look at the most common designs that I've seen introduce a small loop into some portion of the half-wave NFED. So I'm curious, have you seen anything like that around?
I have, and then they're interesting, but they are they put the inductor or the capacitor right where I least want the antenna to be visible. I want it to be unobtrusive in the front yard, so that design doesn't really work.
Yeah. Okay. It does improve the chances of the multiple half wavelengths and quarter wavelengths and such working correctly. So. See what works for you. There are probably different ways of obscuring a small bit of coiled wire, using something either transparent or blue and something. There's all kinds of interesting ways of hiding wires. I find that surprisingly, if you put it up higher than someone's usual position of their neck, almost no one seems to look up at the sky anymore. So, you know, I mean, my antenna system, when it was working, before I put it on the roof, scared some people when it was on the ground. And as soon as I put it about 25 feet off the ground, and people had to kind of strain their neck, they weren't upset at all because they never saw it.
My observations concur with yours completely, but I'm a little precluded out of doing that. But thanks for the thoughts.
Okay. Well, as always, I wish you the best, Jim, and I hope you come back and tell us how things are working out with your antenna designs and such.
I was able to get to Jersey with what you would count as not much more than a bed spring cooked to a ballon last night at a tuner. So I'm making progress. And one comment on another topic before I let you go.
Okay.
You had a comment at the beginning that about something earlier today that was regarding largely, but not solely, a QSO I was involved in between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. this evening. I would invite you to send a recording of that to whoever it concerns, and myself too, if possible. It's an absurd, ridiculous thing that the illegal jammer suggested. And I'll leave it at that. I'll go back to net. No comments needed. Thank you.
Okay. Well, for the most part, I record everything that passes on LIMARC, so it's in multiple files scattered in my shack. So when I get a chance, probably tomorrow, I will take a listen. I tell you, though, I mean, not alluding to anything that you said, but there were, I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago, since moved away executive, the president at the time, gave his approval for a emergency service net of people who weren't, as far as I'm aware, club members. And they were the OK net. And I happened upon them one night, and their signal was awful. And if you listened very closely, the OK net was the Oath Keepers. I don't know if you're familiar with the Oath Keepers. They made a lot of news lately, and I think they're not the same organization they once were. I think the FBI kind of shut most of them down. So and they were having very weird nets on this repeater for a few weeks until it was pointed out the material they were discussing and the emergency they were discussing. So, you know, eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. What can I tell you?
Interesting. Thank you, and back to that.
Okay, next on my list is Harvey, N2PLI. What's your question tonight, Harvey? We'll try one more time. I believe the name was Harvey. N2PLI? Well, I guess Harvey had to go someplace else. Hopefully he will return later. Next on my list is John, N2ZC, about infrared. What's the question, John?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody else. From my knowledge of energy, as the frequency of any signal increases, the energy of the signal increases. Why we use VHF and UHF to reliable short distance stations, it penetrates buildings, etc. And I was surprised to learn. I always knew that infrared damages the eye, and that we actually have an infrared filter within the eye that damages it. But I was surprised. Like, I always assumed it was at a higher frequency of light, but I was surprised to find that it's actually at a lower frequency than the light. And I was wondering why it's so destructive if it's a lower frequency.
Okay, I think something's getting confused. Infrared is emitted by hot objects. So your body is emitting infrared. The sun emits a lot of infrared, but anything hot reflects black body radiation of infrared. Infrared just kind of warms you. If you warm enclosed spaces, you could damage things. So, you know, if you had, say, an infrared laser, it could ruin your eyes just because of the intensity. But all things being equal, we're exposed to kind of infrared every day. What you're describing sounds a heck of a lot to me like ultraviolet, which is not infrared. It's higher than visible light, and it comes in kind of three varieties. You know, one's kind of close to visible light, one's a little bit shorter, and one's very short and very destructive. It doesn't really ionize material, but it does produce radicals, which then goes on to destroy DNA and all kinds of cellular material. So infrared just warms things. Ultraviolet can destroy things. Ultraviolet light, Paul knows, for if you weld without proper ultraviolet protection, you get basically a sunburn on the covering of your eye, and it's a very painful and it can lead to image problems. So I'm not sure whether you're actually thinking in terms of infrared. It sounds, the way you describe it, it's a lot like ultraviolet.
Yeah, there may be something faulty in information I read that I the way I interpreted, you know, of course. But, for instance, infrared cameras, I was always told, don't, you know, you see those, the red lights, and don't look at it. That'll hurt your eyes. And even in an infrared room heater, you know, I've read you're not supposed to look directly at it for that reason.
Okay, I don't have a clue. I have all kinds of things that put out infrared. You know, as you mentioned, cameras, a lot of times they have night vision, so they have these little infrared filters that go on and off. You can even hear the servos working. And usually the LEDs are not pure infrared, so you can sort of see red light dimly coming out of them. Again, the only damage for low-intensity infrared is producing heat inside your eyeball. You know, too much heat is not a good thing. But generally speaking, I don't know of anyone who's really screwed up their eyesight because of regular non-laser infrared. Laser infrared, there's a lot of laser etching equipment. Some of them are CO2 that I think use infrared frequencies, and it's the intensity and the coherence of the light that can damage tissue and your body in general. But as far as I'm aware, there was a big scare about blue light, not even ultraviolet, but a couple years ago the French published some article that blue intense light can disrupt your circadian rhythms and give you insomnia and give you headaches and give you eye aches. And so it was very big in eyeglass stores to offer people blue blockers. It's basically just a very, very light reddish layer to block some of the blue spectrum. But I'm not really familiar with the dangers of routine infrared. And I went to medical school, so I think it would have been brought up to me, certainly when I did my ophthalmology rotation.
You know, that's funny. When I asked the question, I said that Roy is uniquely qualified for this one. Okay, you know what, then? Might have been a misinterpretation on my part, you know, or something, maybe I interpreted right, but the material was wrong. Some people tend to over-exaggerate. Kind of generalize, because I get what you're saying with a laser concentration, et cetera, but I just thought there was something dangerous about that frequency. Okay, thank you, Roy. I think you cleared it up. November 2, Super Charlie, AC
WSUN.
Wesley recognized Paul. You wanted to say something? You're our expert in this.
Okay, I'll be an expert. No, the ultraviolet is definitely the problem. But, you know, just staring at the sun, you know, yeah, you got infrared coming off the sun, but then you also have ultraviolet. And, you know, that you don't want to do that, especially during an eclipse. And the ultraviolet light from welding, you get that from not even looking at the arc directly, you know, by accident. You could look at if there's metal around nearby and that's reflecting the light, you know, off of somebody that's welding. So, you know, stand far away, and they do make special safety glasses for that. But if you ever, you know, you ever get that, they call it a flash, and, you know, you think nothing of it. You don't even know you have it. You know, I've gotten hit with it. So at nighttime, you decide you're going to try to maybe go to sleep. You close your eyes for a minute. You open your eyes, and that's it. You cannot see where you are going. You can see the light bulbs in the room. That's about it. You know, you guide your way through the living quarters, and hopefully you're home when you know where you're going. And that lasts a couple of hours, and it feels like somebody has put sand in your eyes, and you know, it's a problem, and you don't want to do that time and time again. But it does happen. Especially. You know, if you're in that field, I would spend many, many hours involved with welding, with somebody else, myself, and sooner or later, something's going to go wrong, and that's what happens. But you try to avoid something like that. Back to you, Roy. WS2N.
AC2GS. Yeah, it's basically you've sunburned your conjunctiva, the membrane that's covering your eyeball, and that's not a good thing at all. It's never a good idea to stare at the sun. The sun is an intense light source, and it's for all intents and purposes at infinity, and so it forms a nice little sun-shaped image on your retina and kills retina cells, so you'll get a black spot, which is a blind spot, which is not a good thing at all. So it's not only the ultraviolet, but just visible light at high enough intensities. And unfortunately, even invisible infrared at high enough intensities is damaging, again, because it transfers heat, and you don't want to boil tissue. It's not designed to be boiled. So, and once a year at least, there's about three different types of ultraviolet emitters. There's UVA, which is very close to visible light, UVB, which is a little bit shorter, and UVC, which kind of kills almost anything. It's the UVCs that you see in hospital environments kind of being shielded, and they don't really expose people to it, just the environment. And every so often at some kind of party or something, rather than get the UVA or the UVB emitters, they get mercury vapor lamps that emit UVC. And everyone who goes to the party ends up with sunburned eyeballs and all kinds of health problems. It increases your risks of skin cancer going down. So be very cautious. Just because you can't see light doesn't mean invisible types of light are safe. So always be wary. Thank you, Paul. Wes, what do you want to say?
One other thing April 8th, you have a solar eclipse in this area, Roy, so that'll be in the news.
Yeah, I've already kind of seen it. YouTube especially, they've drawn maps. I think it's going to be a partial. It's a little bit, the total eclipse is a little bit further west from us. And matter of fact, I was thinking of putting a link up. There was an article that I read. I think Delta has a flight that's specifically designed to follow the curve of the eclipse, so you can get the biggest bang for the buck out of an airplane window, but nevertheless. So, yeah, we have an eclipse coming. Wesley, did you want to say something?
Your comments about infrared radiation, no magic. I mean, typical science opinion is infrared does more good than bad for the skin. But we're talking about the sun, the rays coming from the sun. So an appropriate intensity dose of infrared radiation that is similar to the daily sun exposure, the actually what the human animal known as mammal is equipped with to survive and take advantage of it. The spectrum of solar radiation reaching Earth is 6.8 ultraviolet in percentage-wise, 38.9 visible light, and 54.3 near-infrared radiation. But we talk about intensity and dose of infrared radiation. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it is applied to everything that applies to inverse square law, which means we're from radio waves of starting from gigahertz to the gamma radiation. So that I would like you to correct me with. And there is a technique called photomodulation, PPM, which some people say emulates condition of natural sound wavelength intensity and can be beneficial to the skin. I'm not sure how much of it is a quack science, because you can expose yourself to the regular sun in during a day in the smart way and you're gonna get the same. One more information, there is the infrared radiation from the heaters is also not harmful, and you also have to have the inverse square law properly applied. Back to you.
AC2GS. Yeah, I mean, all electromagnetic wave operates by the inverse square law. It's the attenuation. If you double the distance, you quarter the intensity at double the distance. But they don't all start with the same energy level. It has to do with the density of the field, the particles, and what frequency they are. The higher the frequency, the higher the energy level they carry. That's why, radio waves at most might heat you up or give you a little burn. Infrared heats things up, but that's about it. Ultraviolet produces radical molecules that then attack other molecules. Higher than that produces ionization and rips electrons completely out of the valence shell, and you can go higher and higher up the gamma ray frequency where the energies are humongous. So, photons of different frequencies possess different energy levels, but they all attenuate at the same inverse square law. And, yeah, I've seen all kinds of things, especially cosmetic medicine is rife with lasers and cryogenic cooling, freezing materials to make you your skin younger and infrared. The trick is that infrared just kind of warms you, so unless you're very, very heated up, it's not a problem. But, the sunlight has a significant amount of ultraviolet, and ultraviolet can produce all kind of damage. I mean, it provokes sun tanning, which is okay, but it increases the incidence of malignancy, skin cancer, and such, and so it can be very dangerous. I don't think anyone promotes ultraviolet light for youthful skin. I've seen infrared, and there's a lot of expensive medical tools that apply infrared radiation. Like I said, there are others that are cryogenically based that cool your skin and are supposed to kind of redistribute fat and all kinds of very questionable claims, but they're somewhat approved by the FDA, so people do it regularly, at least now, and probably in 10 years, when a lot of research papers say that it's probably useless, they'll move on to something else that's equally useless but hasn't been researched yet. We'll see.
More of a comment. The 1 inch is 25.4 millimeter for those who cannot picture sides of the meter. And then we have a thousand part of millimeter, which would be micrometer, and then thousand part of micrometer, that is nanometer. So that's how small it is. I'm not sure if it's 1/10,000 of an inch. Let me drop. So 10 nanometer, 1/10,000 or 100,000. I'm not that fluent in inches. I was raised in a unified system that was also accepted in the United States, but for some reason it's not used. Although British Empire and England changed into metric system. So infrared and ultraviolet, we're talking about the wavelength. The wavelength of infrared ranges from 700 nanometers to 1 millimeter. That's why I explained how much is 1 millimeter. So 700 nanometers to 1 millimeter, so we're talking about near infrared and far infrared. And if we're talking about ultraviolet, then we're talking about 10 nanometer to 400 nanometers. And, of course, in the gap of 700 nanometers and 400 nanometers, we have physical light. Back to you.
Okay. I think you got something wrong. I think you're talking about micrometers, not millimeters.
Oh, no. No. Infrared, if we take how we can measure the infrared, the wavelength of infrared ranges from 700 nanometer to 1 millimeter. And to
exit. Okay, but most of that's in micrometers. But okay. That's a measurement of wavelength. Versus what its frequency is. So that's the nature of all electromagnetic waves. So, at 1 millimeter, it's really, talk about far infrared. It's really far.
So if we say that 1,000 micrometers is 1 millimeter, and 1,000 nanometers is 1 micrometer, and now we want to apply it to the wavelength of ultraviolet, 10 nanometers is the upper range of ultraviolet. And then we have X-rays, and then we have gamma. But I believe it would be good if you say a few words about the energy level per period, because that's what I believe is important to the wavelength when trying to realize how safe or unsafe it is.
Okay, I think I pretty much did that earlier, AC2GS, by the way. I mentioned that up until you reach things like infrared, all you're doing is increasing translational kinetic energy. So that's just a fancy way of saying you raise the temperature. So visible light and lower will make something warmer. Ultraviolet, there's kind of three bands, A, B, and C. They're not quite ionizing yet, but they do turn molecules into radicals, which are highly reactive species and interacts with other molecules and disrupts them and destroys them. So ultraviolet can be used to sterilize, and above ultraviolet is X-ray or gamma rays, in which you're actually ionizing atoms, just ripping valence electrons off of them. So that's probably the most destructive you can do with electromagnetic waves. So I think I said that before, but it's always good to repeat it.
Are you talking about infrared stretches the molecule bonds and ultraviolet breaks the molecule bonds?
Not exactly. Well, part of it, yeah. Even radio waves will cause the bonds to be stretched. They warm up atoms. If you expose an area to RF, it gets hot. That's basically the kinetic energy in the atoms and the molecules are increased. That's what temperature is. It's an average kinetic energy. So it has to do with translational changes to atoms and molecules, the way they rotate and spin and vibrate and bounce and bend, and all those things are translational kinetic energy that translates into temperature. When you get to ultraviolet, it's not really able to rip electrons off of the valence. It can kind of break bonds by producing radicals out of the original molecules, and then those radicals can interact with other molecules and rip them apart as well. So it does break bonds, but it doesn't ionize. You have to get just above ultraviolet before the energy levels are high enough to just rip the electrons off. So you're kind of right. It's the bonds that are broken, but not by ionizing them. It's done through other means.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll finish up with the gentleman. But the first question for you in regards to what you started from this stagnant after you finish everybody would be, when might AI outsmart us and to achieve?
Okay. Yes. Yes, John?
Yeah, thank you, Roy. Yeah, you know, Roy, listening to you speak, can you just explain why would a lower frequency of the infrared that we talked about eat up a substance? And it seems that when we go higher up, again, from my understanding, the higher the frequency, the more energy, it doesn't heat up, or it doesn't heat up as much, maybe? Can you just elaborate on what's going on with that?
Okay. Fundamentally, what goes on are RF, IR, visible light, ultraviolet, gamma, X-ray, are all electromagnetic waves. So it's a propagating electromagnetic wave. They interact on charged particles like positively charged nuclei and negatively charged electrons. If it has a low frequency, it's not very strong. It will impact the electrons and the neutrons, and the energy that it imparts will not be high enough to do much damage, but it has enough energy that gets translated from electromagnetic energy into kinetic energy, and it's just kind of it bangs up against it, and the photon goes away, and you're left with because energy is conserved, you're left with a residual energy in the form of kinetic energy, which is heat. If you bring the energy high enough, you get past the point where you're just shaking an atom or a molecule and you're just ripping it in two. So if you rip it in two, most of the energy is used up in wrecking those bonds, those nuclear and electron bonds. So rather than be translated into kinetic energy, which means heat, you're ionizing the material, and you might have some residual heat in addition, but a lot of the energy is going into breaking those bonds. You have to pay a price to break bonds. Bonds have a certain energy level, and in order to separate them, you have to use up that energy in breaking the bond that can't be used for motion and kinetic energy and temperature.
Well, you cleared that up 100%. I fully understand it. Dick would be proud. Thank you again, Roy.
Thank you, John. I take that as a great compliment. I hope he's looking down on us and he isn't upset, although he would never say it if he was. He was the kindest man I ever knew. Okay, that takes us to Frank, WB2BXO. What you got for us tonight, Frank?
Yeah, very good. I guess since we're talking about wave propagation, I thought it would be interesting to